Will Trevor Lawrence finally have his big fantasy day coming off the Jacksonville Jaguars bye? What do we do if both Lions running backs play against the Chargers this week? And is it a bounce back spot of destiny for the Seahawks passing game? All that and more coming up on the Week 10 Viewer's Guide. Let's get into it. It's Friday, November 10th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that for the preview episode is the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. It's a great day to talk ball. Week 10, some major teams on bye. Fantasy managers trying to lock up playoff spots, trying to get byes. A lot of unusualness in the NFL with the quarterbacks. Guys who can't play right now, guys who were hurt, guys who were changing teams. It's a great day to talk ball. Let's do it.
A pristine day to talk ball, some people would say. I'm with you, Scott, that at first I was like, oh, this is going to be a dicey preview episode with all the quarterback weirdness. Like you mentioned, we have three big-time quarterbacks on bye this week between Tua and Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes. But actually, you know what? I looked at the Week 10 schedule and I felt really good about a lot of these games. So let's talk about some of those games. Reminder for how we do this here on the Weekly Viewer's Guide episode. We give you the games you want to binge, stream, and skip. Well, what the hell does that mean if you're new? It's kind of, again, like streaming culture. You know, the video apps, all that type of stuff out there. The binge games, those are the shows you can't miss. You're watching them as soon as they come out. You might just crush them all in one weekend. The games you want to stream, those are the shows, the games you certainly want to watch start to finish, but you know, you might take a few weeks to finish those, but you really, really do like them. And the games you want to skip, I think that kind of speaks for itself. You're not really trying to watch that. There's really not a ton to say about it, but we'll try to give you something useful out of all those skip games as well. So with that, let's dive into the Week 10 Viewer's Guide and let's talk about the games we want to binge this weekend here in Week 10, starting with San Francisco 49ers. -3, 3-point favorites going to Jacksonville, 45.5-point over under. Both these teams are coming off their bye, Scott, and I find both of them in very interesting places right now. What do you got on this game?
Yeah, you mentioned the key point that they're both off the bye, and I always feel like the game after that week off is a reveal. What is the second half plan? And teams have to fix what isn't working. The Niners are on a 3-game losing streak. The Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence doesn't have a 19-point game in fantasy this year, which blows my mind. Calvin Ridley, after a fast start, has been inconsistent and has been usurped for fantasy value by Christian Kirk on his own team. As you know more than anybody, they play different positions, different types of wide receivers. So Kyle Shanahan's been cooking. Doug Peterson's been cooking. And this game should reveal, is Calvin Ridley going to be in the circle of trust? Very interesting thing about the Niners to me. Baltimore and San Francisco are the only two teams in the NFL right now that run more than they pass. They're ever so slightly run heavy, and you can get away with it for fantasy with the San Francisco receivers, maybe not the Baltimore receivers, because it's been such an efficient offense. But I wonder if that ratio is going to change or not. I don't feel as great as Ayuk makes me a little bit nervous. Debo makes me a little bit nervous. The Niners should be a more fun team. Here's the bottom line with these teams. I feel like, oh, it's a Niners game. Oh, it's a Jaguars game. It should be a fantasy bonanza. You know, the total should be 52. It should be first team to 30. Well, the total's 45.5. As I mentioned, Lawrence hasn't had a great season. Ridley's been inconsistent. The Niners make me a little bit nervous given their star power. So I'm hoping they hit the ground running after the bye, but this is the big reveal game for me in Week 10.
I love that. It's a perfect way of saying it because it's not necessarily like a fantasy bonanza, but it's one of the games I want to just be like ISO'd on. I want to really be dialed in on how this game unfolds. I'm definitely going to rewatch it, you know, on film afterwards, right? It's one of those type of games because I think we're going to learn a lot about these two teams. It's kind of like a critical juncture in both of their seasons. Sticking on Jacksonville before we talk San Francisco here, I saw you tweeted today that Josh Dobbs, shout out to Josh Dobbs, has cleared 20 fantasy points in 4 games this year, whereas Trevor Lawrence hasn't done it once all season, which kind of blew my mind because I think Lawrence has played really well, and I know he's been a fantasy disappointment. I mean, he is a constant staple in the People's Panic Meter episode that Andy and I do to start the week, so people are always upset about Trevor Lawrence, but just didn't dawn on me he hasn't even cleared 20 points once all year. It's pretty wild. This particular defense, I think it's kind of, you know, we focus obviously so much on offense and people talk about Brock Purdy all the time, but really this like three game skid going into their bye for San Francisco has been very defense related. I think, you know, Steve Wilks is going to be on the sideline now. He's not going to be up in the booth. I'm curious as to what effect they think that's going to have, but clearly there's a reason that they're doing it right. DeMeco Ryans was always a down on the sideline guy for San Francisco, and you could tell in the previous two seasons they really fed off that energy. And I mean, Steve Wilks, I know I'm talking like narratives here, but Steve Wilks is a big energy guy. You know, his time as the Carolina Panthers interim head coach, that was a big part of why that team sort of surged to the end of the season, was because of the energy that Steve Wilks provides. So maybe that brings the 49ers defense something. We shall see. They do play single high defense at the second highest rate in the NFL. The Baltimore Ravens are the only other team that play more single high defenses. Typically, we see that lean towards the number one outside receiver in terms of like targets per route run and yards per route run. So maybe this is a get right spot for Calvin Ridley, but it's sort of, as much as we're going to talk about these opposing offenses, I really think the 49ers defense might be one of the most interesting units to watch in this game.
For sure. And let's just put a period on the Lawrence discussion. He had 5 rushing touchdowns last year. He doesn't have a single rushing touchdown this year, and his touchdown rate is down from last year. Most of his efficiency numbers are very similar to last season. And I understand that can make people a little bit anxious because the rookie year, the coaching staff was a joke and everything. I mean, Urban Meyer just shouldn't have been an NFL coach. We've talked about that a million times. So last year, Lawrence takes a step forward and people want to be like a plane taking off where it gets a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. And next thing you know, you're at 20,000, 50,000 feet or whatever. When somebody has a season that's maybe more stuck in neutral, especially when you added a piece like Calvin Ridley, it can make people anxious because like, well, wait a minute, how come this plane isn't taking off? Well, how come we're at the same level? What's going on here? It's supposed to be wheels up time for Trevor Lawrence. I would not be at all surprised if they finish with a great second half. And again, I talk about this being a reveal game, but part of this is just touchdown regression. I also put a post up and I'll talk about it with the Ravens and some other teams, just teams that are out of whack with their touchdown ratios from rushing to passing. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the Jaguars have been a little bit unlucky with their passing touchdowns. And that's the type of thing that can iron itself out quietly at any point in time.
Yeah, that's a great point. And ETN, I'm curious to see his usage coming out of the bye because he had 30 opportunities the game before the bye, 24 carries against the Pittsburgh Steelers and 6 targets, and played a season high 89% of the snaps. I mean, he's been very good for them, but their run game hasn't been super consistent from a success rate standpoint. And I think they didn't really want Travis Etienne to be this type of bell cow back. I think they wanted to be a committee, but their other alternatives, most notably rookie Tank Bigsby, they've not been good enough to get Etienne off the field. So interested to see if that holds up and if that run pass touchdown rate does tend to balance out. Last thing on this game, just the 49ers side here. They're such a hard team to talk about from a fantasy standpoint because it's like, you know what you should do? You should probably just start everybody and like keep it moving and you accept the big games when they come. But just like from a Brock Purdy standpoint, where is your temperature check on Brock Purdy right now?
I was just going to ask you the same question. I mean, he was like a kind of a sleeper MVP candidate for the first month of the season. He's taken a step back, but you know, the Minnesota game, probably concussed in that game. He made a couple of throws late in the game. I just don't think should be on his record for practical purposes. He reminds me of, this is going to sound like a knock, but I'm not knocking him, like a really good version of what Brad Johnson was, or maybe the better Andy Dalton at his peak, which could go to a Pro Bowl, could drive you to a Super Bowl, to a playoff appearance. Of course, Andy Dalton never won playoff games, but I think he can be a plus quarterback. I mean, maybe he can be Kirk Cousins. He's not as physically gifted as Cousins. Obviously, Cousins is hurt right now. But the bottom line is, if you have to make it binary, are you in or out on Brock Purdy? I'm still in on Brock Purdy. I think what he did during this losing streak is somewhat of an excused absence.
Same. I think if you had to put it in on a binary standpoint, I think I'm still in on Brock Purdy. I think the extreme positive takes on Brock Purdy to start the season were ridiculous. And I think the extreme negative analysis of Brock Purdy the last 3 games has also been equally ridiculous. So I'm somewhere in the middle here where usually the truth almost always lies anyways. If you want to talk like a matchup note on this particular game, we have seen over the years that when teams play a lot of man coverage, Brandon Ayuk tends to go off when they play a lot of zone coverage. Deebo Samuel tends to go off, and that really sometimes it doesn't always work, I think, with the player's skill set. But I think this one really does, because if you just look at like these guys in reception perception, Brandon Ayuk's been a great man beater, and Debo's been historically one of the best zone beaters in the NFL since he came into the year, and is not that great against man coverage. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, according to Fantasy Points Data coverage metric matrix, they play zone coverage at the fourth highest rate. So maybe this is a big Debo returns off the bye, fully healthy type of game. And it makes sense too, right? The defense is playing back. They're playing a little more passive. Debo gets the ball underneath, not because of his route running or anything like that, but he's in space. He can break tackles after the catch. So maybe this is a good week to look at Deebo Samuel overs and potentially just make him a very confident like wide receiver two, high-end wide receiver two for your fantasy team. All right, let's move on to the next game here. Houston Texans at Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals are 6.5-point favorites, over under a 47. So many exciting things to talk about in this game, Scott. But I do want to start a little negative here. Cincinnati Bengals have issues at the wide receiver position. Chris Collinsworth called it out in real time on Sunday night that like, oh yeah, Ja'Marr Chase is going to have, he's going to be lucky to like, he's going to be crawling out of bed, I think is what he said. Right. And then he sounded like a guy who had crawled out of bed when he was like, I'm just thankful I'm alive right the next day when he was talking to the media. So he's got a back issue right now. T. Higgins pulled a hamstring in practice. Let's live in a hypothetical negative world real quick. We were all excited about Joe Burrow. People can't say Joe Burrow is back enough. But if Burrow is dealing with a hampered wide receiver room, maybe one or both of these guys, knock on wood, doesn't play in this game, how are we feeling about the Bengals in this particular spot?
You have to back off if he's missing both of them. If Chase can go, I'm not going to change my Burrow rank. And I'm just like everybody else, this is not a unique take, but Burrow, what is it, 10 touchdowns, 2 interceptions the last 2 weeks. He's beaten the Bills. He's beaten the Niners. He's beaten the Seahawks. Those are all playoff teams. He also had Arizona win in there. I think Burrow is like a sneaky MVP candidate right now and a good value, somewhere like 8 to 10 to 1, somewhere in there. Because if he finishes the season strong, the voters are going to give him a pass for playing hurt early in the season, that rain game at Cleveland. You know, play Cleveland and Baltimore the first 2 weeks. By the way, we'll get to that game in a minute. The two best defenses in the NFL, and you play them when you're not healthy. Total excused absence. So I think Burrow, all the Burrow hype, all the Burrow bandwagoning, I'm here for it. But this is not a deep receiver room after those two guys.
Yeah.
Tyler Boyd's not a bad player. Irwin's not a bad player, but you don't want those guys to be starters, not at this point in Boyd's career. They don't have a tight end of any major note. You know, Joe Mixon's a good player, but not really a needle mover. They need these receivers for Burrow to be the player we want him to be. So unfortunately, I know a lot of Burrow managers would probably start him no matter what, but if he's missing both of these guys, I think you really need to think of a change. If Chase goes, I'll just whistle through the graveyard and say Burrow will be fine.
Tyler Boyd actually has, he has gone over 70 yards receiving twice in the last two seasons. One of them was an Atlanta Falcons game where they won 35-17. And that wasn't even like one of those guys missed. Both T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase played in that game. T. Higgins had 95 yards. Ja'Marr Chase had 2 touchdowns and 130 yards. The other game he went over 70 yards, he also went over 100 yards. That was against the Jets in week 4 last year. And again, T. Higgins played in that game. Ja'Marr Chase played in that game. So there really hasn't been one of those guys goes out. Tyler Boyd immediately shoots up to the moon. And the depth beyond those guys, like Charlie Jones is a prospect I liked, but, you know, he flashed in the preseason, but that's kind of a long shot. The tight ends popped up last week, but somebody's asked me, like, maybe the tight ends. Is he a guy? Is there a guy there? But they're not playing enough to confidently play any of those guys. So really there isn't even like a, oh man, these two transformative talents get pushed to the bench and somebody else jumps up here.
You're so right. I've done this the last couple of years, maybe not this year, but the year prior. Oh, Tyler Boyd, here's a pivot because one of the guys in front of him isn't playing, and Boyd's come up so small on those spots. And I mean, I don't want to knock the guy. He had a nice career. You know, he had the classic third year breakout, which feels like an antiquated theory now, but you know, he didn't do much his first 2 years. He goes over 1,000 his third year. It was over 1,000 his fourth year, was a nice player at peak, was probably a really solid wide receiver too for a couple of seasons. But now I don't even think he's a stash. I don't even think there's contingent upside here. Like, say
no.
Higgins or Chase, nobody wants to say this, but say they needed to miss a lot of time. As much as I love Burrow, I just don't see a ceiling for Tyler Boyd. So I don't – this is a time where you're trying to look for who can I roster, who might I be playing in a month from now, who I'm not using now. I don't even put Tyler Boyd in that conversation. But hopefully – I am optimistic that Higgins and Chase will both go, and that means that – you know, the triplets are back together, the band is back together, and the Bengals can be one of what we thought they would be, one of the five best offenses in football.
I think it would be, if these receivers miss time, I think it would be a pretty Joe Mixon heavy game, which nobody like gets excited about Joe Mixon at this point. But at the same time, the Texans, they're ninth in rushing success rate allowed, but I bet if there's no Jamar Chase and or T. Higgins, like, they get under center a lot, and Joe Mixon runs much better under center than from shotgun. Houston Texans side of this thing, I mean, look, C.J. Stroud's the talk of the NFL right now. He should be the talk of the NFL right now. And, like, while that is the case, while he's playing like this, I think he's a fantasy starter. I think Tank Dell's a fantasy starter. I think Nico Collins a fantasy starter. I think Dalton Schultz is a fantasy starter. And then I'm not really messing around with the backfield. Any different takes there?
Pretty much I co-signed everything you said, with the addition of, if you need to dig deep, a lot of good receivers aren't playing this week, right? You know, the Rams have two guys. Miami has two guys. Philly has two guys. Rashee Rice and a cast of thousands in Kansas City.
The Chiefs have seven guys that nobody wants to
play. The Chiefs have 27 guys, and one of them who we kind of like, and that's about it. Fine. So you might need to go to Noah Brown, who came out of nowhere last week, has a game that he's not going to repeat. I get it. But this passing game is concentrated to four guys. Collins has been in the circle of trust all year. When Dell's been healthy, he's been the same. Dalton Schultz is a solid tight end. And the tight end position has made a nice comeback. Maybe it's because they gave them that made-up holiday of, you know, tight end day or whatever a couple of weeks ago. But it feels like that position has had a lot more buoyancy lately. And Dalton Schultz has been part of that story. But C.J. Stroud, we love it. Why don't we love Arthur Smith? Because he doesn't prioritize his best players. Why do we love C.J. Stroud? Because he's like, okay, I got three or four really good receivers. I'll throw the ball to them. And the team, most of their touchdowns have come through the air. They've had trouble running the ball, even with the backfield ostensibly to himself last week. Devin Singletary didn't do anything. We know the Houston Texans offensive line is a problem. You can mask that easier in the passing game, although it's just miraculous that Stroud, I can't tell you anything about Stroud that everybody else isn't saying, you haven't heard already. I mean, he should have been the first pick. He's been incredible. And it's just fun to watch. Burrow still feels kind of like the new kid in the block. I know he came in the NFL at an advanced age. He transferred in college and all that stuff. But Burrow is still kind of a newer superstar in the league. This is obviously Stroud's first season. It's exciting to see them go head-to-head in this game, and they don't play against each other. It's not how football works. But I'm going to play total is 47. I'm going to play a lot of these Texans guys proactively. Collins, Dell easily. Schultz fairly easily. And even Noah Brown, if you have to go deep. I think it's going to be another Devin Singletary, 14 touch, 37 yards, no touchdown game.
Keep an eye on Robert Woods, who did return to practice today, so he could upset the Noah Brown party here. But
for sure.
I love what you're saying about the tight ends. Like, hey, when has a fake holiday not boosted everybody's spirits? I mean, come on, workplaces do that all
the
time.
I'm all about the fake holiday, man.
Yeah. So hey, if the tight ends can get rolling off fake tight end day, then I'm all for it. All right, next game up here: Cleveland Browns at Baltimore Ravens. Ravens are 6-point favorites. The over-under is 38.5. It's probably not going to be a big fantasy day. Okay, these are the two best defenses in the NFL, but you can't not put this game in the binge category, right? Because, look, Browns are very fascinating to talk about. I know their offense is kind of boring, and, like, when is Deshaun Watson going to show up? But that defense is great. The Ravens might be the best team in the NFL. And I still think, Scott, there's meat left on the bone on that offense. And I'm curious your thoughts on the passing touchdown stuff here, because, man, I think there's a lot of upside still in that passing game in Baltimore, which is crazy to say because, again, like, consensus-wise, they might be the best team in the NFL right now.
I agree with that. I do think they're the best team in the NFL, but they're a very difficult fantasy team to unpack. So the Ravens, 17 rushing touchdowns. I'm sorry. Yeah, 17 rushing touchdowns against 10 passing touchdowns. That's the heaviest slant towards running touchdowns in the NFL. Most of the teams in the league have more passing touchdowns than rushing touchdowns. There's only a handful of teams that have more rushing touchdowns. I tweeted that earlier today, so you can check that out on my feed if you want to look deeper into that. And so you might say, okay, well, great. Well, Baltimore's dynamic running the ball, but even that's complicated because Gus Edwards is going to get some of the touchdowns. Obviously, Jackson's going to get some of the touchdowns. Keaton Mitchell gets on the field and shot out of a cannon, 9 for 138 last week. He was terrific. Justice Hill's going to have a role. So if you told me, Matt, if I decided to go, I don't know, to bet for 4 months, I'm just going to skip the first couple months of the NFL season, and you text me, you say, hey, the Ravens are the best team in football. It's early November. I'm like, oh, okay. Who's going to the moon? Lamar Jackson? Well, he's been good, not great. Oh, J.K. Dobbins, right? Well, he got hurt week one. Okay, Gus Edwards. Well, yeah, he's been good. But Trey Flowers, yeah, last week, one catch. They have a lot of receivers. Their usage is very spread out. I feel like for a team that's playing, they're easily the highest point differential in the NFL. They are the consensus number one team. They have a great defense. As you said, these are the two best defenses. They own the NFC. I guess you don't get a look at the Ravens regularly, and maybe they're a very difficult matchup. Browns, of course, play them twice a year. I just felt like if the Browns were going to be the best team in football, it would be a little bit more fantasy friendly than it's been so far.
No, I'm with you. And like this receiving room, Zay Flowers has 24% air yard share. He's a 23.4% target share. Those lead the team, but that doesn't indicate that like he's dominating targets. Cause like you said, they're pretty spread out. Like Nelson Agholor is more in the mix than anybody would have expected. And I don't even think Agholor has been bad this year. I mean, he's Nelson Agholor, which isn't surprising, but he just is what he is. That said, there's kind of a narrative right now around Zay Flowers that like, oh, because of his usage, he's not beating NFL cornerbacks. Like he's not winning down on downfield routes. That could not be farther from the truth when you watch him play. Like this guy gets open on big boy routes. Just they haven't used him there. I got to think that at some point, the Ravens coaching staff sees what I'm seeing when I watch the player and they start to kind of use him more in that way because there's no reason that he hasn't been. And I know you want to make fun of me for this and plenty of people probably would, but Rashad Bateman has started to look a lot better of late. Like Scott, if you're just listening to the show, you're not watching on YouTube, Scott is smirking and like nodding his head and like, here goes Harmon keeping the candle lit when he probably should just blow it out. But I'm telling you, Scotty, he's looking like a more functional NFL player right now than he was. And I don't think he's about to turn into a fantasy star or anything, but I think it just goes to the point that like there is meat left on this bone in this passing game. And like, if Zay gets started to use in more a full field type of way, because I think he could be that player, and Bateman starts to get back to like functional NFL starter level, like maybe that's what takes Lamar Jackson from the atmosphere to the moon in fantasy.
You know, I don't want to be a killjoy about this game for fantasy purposes. The total is 38.5. I don't think they're going to get to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you.
Because Baltimore, as we said, they've been run heavy. They have different guys who can run, different guys who have different skill sets. Jackson's always going to be a proactive runner. And we never know what Deshaun Watson's going to do. I mean, last week he gets that lucky helmet touchdown to Amari Cooper. And Cooper's a guy, I'll give him credit. I mean, when I least expect it, Cooper seems to have a big game. He's done it with backup quarterbacks at times. He's done it with Watson at times. The touchdown was a fluke.
He's played so well this year. He's played so well.
He's a good player. And he's at an age where you start getting nervous about guys. And it's been, in a lot of ways, the year of the old player. And I guess maybe Cooper's on the periphery of that. You know, maybe he's not at an age where we worry about him yet, but he's getting close to that point.
Well, he came into the league at like seemingly 19 years old. He's been in the league forever, but he's only 20. He's like the youngest 29-year-old of all time.
Well said. And man, what a weird year it's been for Alabama receivers. We could do a podcast separate on itself. And he was the first of that wave, right? The guys after him.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a really fun, maybe for the offseason when we're trying to come up with some different topics. But I'm just afraid the Browns love their defense. Jim Schwartz has been amazing. The talent, all three levels, they have playmakers. It's not just the big guys, but I'm afraid the Browns could score 6 points in any week. And this looks like a game where it's going to get to halftime before every other game, right? They're going to be, you watch a red zone. Yeah. Oh, the Ravens and Browns have already gone to half. Justin Tucker just made a 52-yard field goal. It's Baltimore 10, Cleveland 3. You know, I there's not going to be a lot of scoring here. The Browns need to make this an ugly game. And they're going to, and can you trust any of their running backs? I don't trust Watson. This is going to be, if to the people who say, oh, the NFL, it's all about offense. It's illegal to play defense. And, you know, they make everything so easy for the quarterbacks and you can't breathe on the receivers. The people who want to see football played the way it was played a generation or two ago, this is your game, because this is going to be a slobber knocker. This is going to be like a lot like the Steelers and Ravens have games like this a lot, where it's like the 13-10, 16-13 game. This is exactly what you're going to get from the Browns and Ravens this week.
Yeah, this is your game. I can't say enough about that Ravens pass defense. They just swallowed up a really good Seattle Seahawks receiving core last week. Like, people were just not open in that game, and those guys get open routinely. You've got me really distracted now on like an off-season podcast idea of like, you know, because Alabama and Ohio State like are wide receiver U, and you could argue that both of those, like, it's been a really weird year for Alabama receivers. Like you said, Ohio State's had a weird year in terms of receivers, right? Like JSN hasn't gotten off and running necessarily. Chris Olave's had a weird year. Garrett Wilson gets thrown asunder, back with Zach Wilson immediately. Terry McLaurin seems to have a weird year every year because he plays with the weirdest quarterbacks ever. And like Michael Thomas has maybe had the weirdest career of all time for a wide receiver room. So that you put a pin in that for off-season podcast ideas. Last thing on this game, and we'll move on. Rubber meets the road. Keaton Mitchell. Start or sit in week number 10 here?
You start him, but it's going to be 7-10 touches. He has a hope he makes one big play. And you mentioned that Baltimore pass defense being so good. A huge part of that is the Ravens can get a pass rush without devoting a lot of people to it. And a lot of times a team will max protect and the Ravens will still beat it with some of the games they run up front. It's a really fun defense to watch.
Colin, producer Colin, asked in the chat, like, what if you have Gus Buss in addition to Keaton Mitchell? Colin, I'm gonna say this to you, and I'm gonna say this to all the people that do this themselves. Stop doing this, okay? Stop having two running backs from the same team. You're locking it in that you're gonna make your life miserable. Yeah, because he has the two of the Lions backs on the same team. Colin, you're out of your damn mind, okay? David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs on the same team. I had somebody tweeted me today, like, oh, I have Tyler Allgeier and Bijan Robinson on the same team. Why would you do that to yourself? Why would you do? Because if one of those guys hits, the other is not going to hit. Like, it's a, or at least they're not going to hit to the same level that it could if you didn't, like, if the other guy doesn't exist or the other guy misses time. Because, like, oh boy, you've gotten a couple of good weeks out of Jahmyr Gibbs. Well, yeah, I wonder why. Because the other guy was hurt. Like, never do this to yourself. Never do this to yourself.
And if you do, I found myself in a fantasy hockey league where it's a, I'm not going to give you the details, bore you with that, or fantasy hockey talk on this show to begin with, but you shouldn't have multiple players on the same team play the same position. I had two players on the Minnesota team because one of them was hurt. The best pickup was one of the other guys. So I went around the league and thought, okay, does anybody else have this same situation? Did they have two forwards on the same team? Jeff Erickson had two forwards on New Jersey. And very conveniently, all four players were about the same talent level. So I just said to Jeff, look, I should get more diversity. You should get more diversity. Which Minnesota guys you want, which New Jersey guy you want to trade for me. They're all about even. We get a trade done in like 2 or 3 minutes. Fantasy football is a much different game. But if you find yourself in that position, Matt's outlining, I agree. You don't want to be in that position. Look around the league. Most of the time, trades get done for two reasons. One, because people have depth and it's easy to make a trade. It's like trading baseball cards. Oh, I have doubles of this guy. I'll trade it for that guy. Fine. Or people make desperation trades. There's a big controversy in the Dave Damashek, Bill Simmons Fantasy Football League. Damashek made a trade with a guy who was in bye week hell. It probably made Damashek's team better in the long run, but that guy needed to win right now.
Right.
And so trade deadline's coming up soon in Yahoo. I know Sal Vitri, who's joined the Yahoo team this year, does a lot of great trade advice, and he's on the show every week, and he's giving you great tips on how to manage that market, because it's all about perception a lot of the time. What does the market think about this player, that player? But if you find yourself in a position where you're doubled up, don't do that. That's bunting in baseball. It's playing for the small inning. You want to play for the big inning. I know later in the season, maybe there are certain assets I would protect with a backup, but generally speaking, you don't want to be doubled up at a position on the same team. It's a losing strategy.
100%. Yeah, that will change when we get to like playoff time. It's like, now we're going to tell you stash all those backup running backs. Not just be your team's backup running back, but right now, week 10, we're trying to get some wins. These two teams, next two teams we're going to talk about here, Detroit Lions, 3-point favorites going to LA to take on the Chargers, 48.5-point over under. These two teams need to get a win, Scott. These two teams, especially LA, needs to keep it up to get in the AFC playoff race. But let's stick on those lines for a sec. We just talked about the running backs. Dave Montgomery could play in this game. If he does play in this game, what does the split look like between Montgomery and Gibbs? Because I thought Dan Campbell's comments about that this week in the press conference were notable.
Right. hinting towards 50-50. And I think this is a team. Not every team in the NFL tells us the truth. You know, it was just so nice. Like when the Packers said Aaron Jones is ready to go, and he was, and they unleashed him. You know, because
that was teams, nice.
Most teams don't even want to admit. You know, Arthur Smith doesn't want to admit the Falcons are playing a game this week. It's like, oh, okay, you genius, you figure it out. You know, I'm so sick of Arthur Smith. But
did you? How many of the 5.5 minutes did you that where he explained why Bijan Robinson doesn't get red zone work? Did you listen to?
I mean, just the 30-second clips I caught here and there. I'm not actively seeking out Arthur Smith's content because it just makes me mad.
Smart guy.
We'll pile on him in a minute. I'll probably get flagged for a personal foul, but
later on, I tell you what, later in the show, much later.
I think there's more Lions backfield stress than there needs to be, because here's the thing. It's only two guys. It's a plus offense. It's probably the best offensive line in football. It's pretty darn close to it if it isn't. It's an offensive coordinator we like. Ben Johnson headed probably towards a head coaching job next year. That's enough. There's enough to go around. They can both catch it. They can both run it. You know, maybe Gibbs needs to get more lucky to get a touchdown, because when they're in close, it's probably Montgomery area, although Montgomery has been hurt a couple times, so we don't know if he can play the rest of the season unimpeded. But they're both startable. And I don't feel bad for the guy who's like, oh, I had Gibbs. He was going off. Now Montgomery's back. So what? Gibbs is going to get 14 touches in this game, 15, 16 touches, something like that. There's enough work for both of them. The Lions offense is pretty fantasy friendly. Goff's good enough. They play indoors at home. Most of their schedule is indoors. This is a game, obviously, weather won't factor in. The 18 Chargers fans won't bother them. We know where the ball's going every week. St. Brown's like a perfect fantasy guy, right? Because he gets 7-8 targets to start with. And if the game falls right, he'll get 14 to 15. He might get like 18 to 20 in a right week. Laporte is a tight end who broke the rookie rules. They have good support receivers. I don't think any of them are startable now. Reynolds, DPJ, Jameson Williams, they're all, I'm not even sure any of them are really stashable. I mean, DPJ just joined a new team. You have to have low expectations there. Reynolds hasn't done much lately, but St. Brown's such an easy start. I would love to play Gibbs or Montgomery anywhere I could. Goff's a top 10 quarterback. Laporte is probably a top 5 tight end. I actually think the Lions are going to beat the Chargers pretty easily. The Chargers did very little right in that Jets game, as the Jets kind of said, we don't want this game, you can have it. But the Chargers offense didn't play well. And no, the Jets defense is very good. It's better than the Lions defense. But the Lions defense has been a lot better this year. It's improved. They have a decent pass rush. This looks like Lions 27, Chargers 13 to me.
I co-signed basically everything you said about the Lions there. Kind of co-signed everything you said about them beating the Chargers there too. Because like, this offense is in rough shape, man. I mean, I don't want to be mean, but they're playing with 10 guys on offense right now because Mike Williams is out, Josh Palmer's on IR, and he might not play again this season. Like, Quentin Johnson is just like I said, they're playing with 10 guys on offense right now. Like, I don't want to be mean, but that's where they're at with that particular player and how he has performed so far. Maybe it changes.
At least he played more Monday.
Well, they don't have a choice. They don't have a choice.
Could you squint and see him stashable or not even bother?
I mean, you can stash him and like hope that what I just said is like not what I said is not true. Like that eventually he develops, but what he has shown on an individual level is just, it's next to nothing. Like, I mean, it is pretty bad.
I hate to say these names, but because most of the time when guys go early in the draft at receiver in recent years, there's been so many hits, but you get an Akeel Harry here, you get a Jalen Reagor there. I'm just worried that maybe it's going to be like, we're going to look back in a few years, like, oh yeah, Quentin Johnston, you know, well, a third or fourth round pick. No, he went in the first round. Yeah. It's like Jalen Reagor went before Justin Jefferson. We'll never be able to unpack that. You know, my angst about all the players the Patriots could have drafted instead of Nikhil Harry, although who's to say the Patriots would have actually gotten a lot out of some of those guys, but what a great receiver draft that was. And they took totally the wrong guy. Quentin Johnson's going to go down, because I still think Njigba's going to get there, and we'll get to that game in a second, which looks like a fun game. But yeah, I don't think Johnson is stashable right now either. And that's a hot take. I think probably everybody's in agreement on that.
All right, next game up here, final one of the binge category. And Colin, actually, producer Colin, advocated for this one in the binge category. I initially had it in stream.
Good man.
Washington Commanders at Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks are 6-point favorites, 44.5 over under. Looks like a great bounce back spot for that Seahawks passing attack that got bodied last week, Scott, against the Commanders defense that can't really cover anybody. And dude, Sam Howell is like a warhorse right now. I mean, they're throwing the ball at an absurd rate. They're throwing the ball as if they're like the Chiefs. And they're not the Chiefs, but it's fun for Sam Howell in fantasy, and don't look now, Scotty, but it might be fun for our boy Jahan Dotson.
I'm so glad this is in the binge. Colin, I would have pitched for it too if Colin didn't get there first. Washington is 29th in pass defense DVOA. However you want to measure being able to defend the pass, DVOA is one way to do it. There's other ways to do it. They stink at it.
Yeah.
And when you want totals 44.5, it feels light to me. And I realize mm-hmm. the Seahawks offense has had stops and starts. Obviously, Baltimore made them look really bad last week. Give Baltimore a lot of credit for that. But it hasn't been a great Geno Smith year, and it makes me nervous when I think about their passing game. But Washington's not only a get-right defense, but here's the other key part of this, why this game could really be fun, is their offense fights back. Their offense matched Philadelphia with points. Howell, the last 2 weeks, one sack against Philly, three sacks against New England. So that's a big improvement for a guy who's still on pace to take 83 sacks, which would be an NFL record. I believe David Carr is the record, 72, 76, something like that. Right, 76 sounds right. Yeah. Howell's on pace to have 667 pass attempts. McLaurin has popped the last couple of weeks. Dotson is finally free for use again. This just has a look of a game where Howell's going to throw 45 passes, where the Commanders, I think, will score over 20 points. It's going to be a lot of scoring. This game's going to be on the Red Zone channel every 2 minutes, and it's going to be like Seahawks 30, Commanders 26. It's going to be a fun fantasy game, and anybody you're borderline on in the passing games, I say play. Even JSN, I think, is a great bye week fill-in. Jahan Dotson back in the circle of trust. I would play Howell if he was available to me. And Geno Smith, I realize it's hard to trust, but you got to write off a lot of that game. Early clock, Baltimore. It's going to be Geno Smith's best game of the season because he's never going to get an easier matchup than the Washington pass defense.
Yeah, I'm trying to break ties in favor of starting players in this game.
For sure. Well said.
Yeah, that's a good way to put a bow on it. All right, let's move to the stream category here. Starting with the New Orleans Saints at the Minnesota Vikings. Saints are 2.5-point road favorites going into Minnesota, 40.5-point over-under. The Saints are like living in the stream category for me because they're just good enough to have so many potential viable players, but they're just so frustrating and annoying on offense. And like the Taysom Hill stuff is just unstoppable right now. I mean, unbelievable what's going on there. And I don't know. I mean, the Saints were made for the stream category here, Scott.
This is knuckleball against knuckleball. This is Necro against Necro. This is Wakefield against R.A. Dickey. Joshua Dobbs, over 20 fantasy points, 4 times. Still waiting on you, Trevor Lawrence, to do that once. He's only had one disaster start. That was week 1 when he helicoptered in to save Arizona. Week 1 against Washington. Every other week, he's at least been in the top 20, and he's several times been inside the quarterback 1 cut line because he runs. He's second in the position in rushing yardage. Didn't have the greatest efficiency last week as a passer, but he joined the team 10 seconds before the game. I mean, he didn't know the cadences. He didn't know people's first names. All I want is for him to give some buoyancy to this offense so I can play Hawkinson, so I can play Addison, so I can play Jefferson when he comes back, which you're going to do anyway. But you give the offense a fighting chance. He gives them that. And man, are the Saints a knuckleball. Because when they get near the goal line, no, it's not Kamara and not Jamal Williams, though eventually, because they love him as a blocker so much, they'll give him a kind of a courtesy touchdown. It's not Derek Carr. It's Taysom Hill running, Taysom Hill throwing, Taysom Hill catching, his little punt pass kick competition. And that just mucks things up for fantasy, even with people back. Williams is back. Johnson, the tight end, is back. It doesn't matter. This is the Taysom Hill featured offense at the goal line. And he's the top 10 tight end for the last 3 weeks. You have to keep using Taysom Hill in props. You have to keep using him in fantasy until it goes wrong. And then somebody eventually will tweet to me and be like, he's not tight end. Well, he is in our game. I play the hand they dealt me. They're saying I can use Taysom Hill at tight end. I'm going to use him. They're saying Joshua Dobbs is a starter. I'm going to use him over a lot of big names this week. And man, the rushing floor, it's just the way the game is scored. It's the Konami code, Rich Rebar. Joshua Dobbs competes. He's a good athlete. When he does throw the ball, those guys can make plays too. 40.5 is his total. I think that's a mistake. I think this game's going to easily sail past that.
Yeah, I did not get Josh Dobbs in the spots where I have Jalen Hurts as my starting fantasy quarterback off waiver wires because
people are
excited about him. Ugh, I'm like stuck with Taylor Heinicke in a 14 team in the Eckler League, which is a 14 teamer, and I've got to stream Heinicke. Yeah, I mean, gross. Anyways, nobody wants to hear about my fantasy problems. Last thing on this game, Scott. Anybody that does media, anybody that does podcasts, we have our like set of lines like that we reuse a lot. I've got a ton. You've got the one about, and you said, and I like this. You like they're playing like they met 5 minutes before the game when we do the recap show. After the Josh Dobbs performance, are you going to have to retire? They met 5 minutes before the game because Josh Dobbs and his teammates literally didn't even know each other's names, and they went out and won a game.
Oh, I loved it. That was producer Colin talked about playing football on Thanksgiving. That's what that was. It felt like, okay, here's my uncle. You know, here's my sister-in-law. You know, who can block? Who can run an out route? Or just everybody go deep, whatever. It just feels like they're making it up. They're right in the dirt. I love it, man.
It was awesome.
You know, we're at a time where in sports where optimization has taken over and, you know, NBA, it's all about shooting threes. And in baseball, try to hit a home run or draw a walk and the ball's in play as often. And in football, it's so much easier to throw the ball now. So a lot of the offenses are copycat. I love teams that have a distinctly different identity. Now, granted, look, I wish I'd do anything to have Kirk Cousins back because that made the Vikings much more fantasy fruitful. But the fact that these two teams are knuckleballers are unlike anybody else in the NFL. That's a feature to me, not a bug.
All right, next game up here, Green Bay Packers at Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers are 3-point favorites. The over-under is 38.5. I mean, the Steelers, baby, what are you going to do? They're not that fun to watch. People don't understand why they're good. But they're good, man. And they're the much better team. I think they're about to smoke the Packers in this game.
One of my favorite stats of this week, Pittsburgh's 5-3. They've been outgained in yardage every week of the season, which is just amazing. How do you have five wins? Defense is good. The Browns gave away that Monday night game. Just when you are ready to give up on Kenny Pickett, he makes a play. Our Deontay Johnson nightmare is over. He finally scored a touchdown. George Pickens has been kind of hot the last couple of weeks. He's a little bit upset. I wonder if that squeaky wheel gets greased. Jalen Warren's making up ground on Najee Harris. Is it a point now where we rank Warren higher, or maybe if you needed upside, you would like Warren more? I hope people don't. We talked about not having backs on the same teams. I wouldn't want the only worse than one running back of the Steelers is two of them, right?
But could you imagine?
Or you know, maybe people out there with Deontay and Pickens. You know, not that they aren't both good players, but you're really hurting your upside there. But this is the good side.
You're gonna have two receivers from the same team. But you better have like two receivers. Well, I mean, it hasn't really worked out anywhere this year to have the two receiver situation. But typically, you want them on a good offense. You do not want them on the Steelers' offense.
If I told you could have two receivers on the same team, and there's a couple of obvious ones because Hill and Brown have such high upsides, you don't even care if Waddle and Devonta Smith come for the ride or not because those first guys are going to do great. And we thought that Puka and Cup would coexist, but then the quarterbacks got hurt and, you know, Brett Rippon's not helping anybody. For all the down talk I gave the Steelers, it keeps us from talking about the Packers. Jordan Love makes my eyes hurt. Aaron Jones was a volume play last week. He wasn't great in the efficiency. The receivers, it just seems every week there's another excuse for Christian Watson. I realize he has a litany of injuries right now. This is a laundry list of them, so he hasn't been healthy. But I like Dobbs a little bit. Yeah, I like Reed a little bit. He made some rookie mistakes last week, but he also had his 21-yard run on a manufactured touch. I'd like to see more of that. Like most Steelers games, the total is in the 30s. You expect this to be – you said you think the Steelers are going to win easily. That probably means, what, 20-10?
Yeah, well, yeah. It won't be anything like they're going to get to the 30-point range. That's impossible. But still, I think they win this game pretty easy, mostly because I can't
give me a running. Give me a Pittsburgh. If you had to use a Pittsburgh running back for whatever silly things you need to use things for, who would you go with?
I mean, I really like want to whisper this as quietly as I possibly can. But I think Najee Harris kind of looked good last week.
Okay,
I think he kind of looked good last week.
Well, I was streaming the game. There was like a glitch. I didn't see the two plays that he looked good on. You know who won that game for me, by the way? We'll get to him in a minute. Will Levis. I thought Will Levis was really good.
Yeah. Hey, well, we'll get to them right now because that's the next game up here. Tennessee Titans. That's a freaking segue there, Scotty. Tampa Bay Buccaneers welcoming the Tennessee Titans. Bucks are 1.5-point favorites, 38.5 over-under. This is another one that I could see potentially going over the total here. Yes. Talk to me about your Will Levis thoughts.
I totally agree. We just had back-to-back games with 38.5 totals, and I feel like the Green Bay-Pittsburgh game, it would be 10-7. I wouldn't be surprised. With Tennessee and Tampa Bay, you might say, well, these are stone-under teams. They're going under every week, but both teams – The Titans notoriously a pass funnel, much better in run defense, and part of it by scheme. And you're not going to run on Mike Vrabel. It's like a thing with him. The Buccaneers are better against the run than the pass. It's not as stark as the Titans splits, but the point is this. This game is set up for offense. Levis has been poised. The moment's not too big for him. He had the big connections with Hopkins in his first game. He tried really hard to steal that game from the Steelers. And whatever we want to say about the Steelers' offense, the defense is good. The home field advantage is still good. And Levis almost stole that game last week. They've had extra prep time for this game. And Mayfield's been fantasy reliable for like 3 weeks in a row. They have a pretty concentrated usage tree in Tampa Bay, which means Cade Otton is startable. Evans is startable. I know Godwin's been a little bit frustrating. He's got the unlucky touchdown rate, but he's startable. This game's going to be like 23-20, 24-21, something like that. You're going to get more than Vegas is telling you you're going to get in this game. I actually think there's a lot of plausible plays here.
I was more impressed with Will Levis on Thursday night than I said this, I think, earlier in the week, that I was more impressed with him on Thursday night against the Steelers than I was when he threw four touchdowns against the Falcons, because I think he just showed you a lot of NFL stuff. He threw a pick at the end of the game. You know, you're trying to win. You're a negative game strip. It's going to happen. Whatever. Who cares? I think that Mayfield, it's regressed a little from where it was to start the year when it was like revelation type stuff what he was doing, but he's still playing pretty well. I really do think this game is very interesting. I think Hopkins is 100% in the circle of trust with Will Levis playing right now. We talked about Kyle Phillips earlier in the week as like a deep, deep sleeper because he played a lot. He's playing from the slot, and the Bucs have just been getting flamed by every passing game, but they've really been getting beat up in the slot. So keep an eye on that one. Maybe he's just a prop bet type of guy this week whenever the line comes up for him. But yeah, there's a lot of intrigue for me in this game. I like it a lot from a fantasy perspective. Final game in the stream category, Denver Broncos at Buffalo Bills. Bills are 7.5-point favorites, 47 over under. This is our Monday night football game here. Scott, the Broncos coming off their bye are no longer a cupcake defense. They played pretty well in the two Chiefs games. They obviously won the game before the bye week. I still am not that interested in their passing game, but how back is Javonte Williams, who had a ton of carries before going into the bye?
Look really good. And the key with the Broncos is divorce yourself from whatever you thought of them after that Miami game. They caught Miami on the wrong day. It's hard to play Miami early in the season. They have that great stadium where the other team has to sit in the hot part of the stadium, and the Dolphins are in the cool side of the stadium. What a great design by them. Great, great work, Miami Dolphins. So they threw up a 70 burger. It's a once in a lifetime thing. The Broncos aren't that bad. They're just one of the middling teams of the NFL. And a case for Williams, the Broncos have 16 passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown. That's the heaviest, as you would expect, the heaviest ratio of pass to run touchdowns in the NFL. And that's at some point that just has to even self out a little bit. And Russell Wilson's been okay. I actually think Cortland Sutton, who Salvitri has been talking about as a sell, I think he might be a hold because Sutton's the only guy who makes sense when they need to throw from in close. That's not really Judy's role, and they don't have a dominant tight end here. So I think Sutton will still continue to get those red zone and goal line opportunities. But at some point, the Broncos, this ratio is going to balance itself out at least a little bit. There's going to be a little bit of correction here. So it's go time for Javonte Williams. It feels like the Bills play all their games standalone. They've been Thursday night. They played in London. There's a Monday night game here. They had a Sunday night game with the Bengals not that long ago. They played every possible slot you can play. Now you're probably telling me they're playing on Thanksgiving night or something like that. The Buffalo Bills have become the NFL's tinker toy, but they need to show us something. They're kind of in danger of not making the playoffs right now. Diggs, Allen, no help needed there. Gabe Davis is kind of the touchdown or bust guy. We've been talking about Dalton Kincaid. He's great. Play him. He's really a receiver, not a tight end. But I even think Shakir is playable. He's caught all 14 of his targets the last 3 weeks. He has the trust of Josh Allen. Maybe he's even kind of getting in Gabe Davis's way a little bit. If I needed to go deep at receiver, Shakir's a name I could plug.
I like that. The Bills do not play on Thanksgiving, but they do have a Saturday game, December 23rd.
So. Okay.
Then another slot for the Buffalo Bills. I'm definitely interested to see if they just don't play the Bengals well. Lou Anarumo seems to have Josh Allen's number, knows how to frustrate him. I'm curious to see if they can bounce back in this one. And like, again, I don't think the Broncos are a cupcake, but they're a solid, like they're a beatable opponent, even if they are solid. And like, I need to see something similar to the offense we got on Thursday. I mean, structurally, it was the same offense from like a, you're seeing a lot of Shakir, you're seeing a lot of Dalton Kincaid. You need to see that stuff. Structurally, pretty similar offense to what they saw on what we got on Thursday night against the Bucks. I need to see that in like a winning effort here for the Bills. I am really interested to watch this game. It's a good standalone game. The rest of the schedule is not a good standalone game. And let's get into it now with the skip category, Scott. We've got two games in here that are island games that are in skip. Starting with the Indianapolis Colts, 1.5-point favorites, going to New England to take on the – no, not going to New England, going to Germany.
Germany.
Home game, quote, for the New England Patriots. I just Ron Burgundy the script on that one. 43.5-point over-under. Starting on the Colts side, because this game is really in the skip category for the Patriots. The Colts are actually a fun team, and they're a really fun fantasy team, although I am very personally upset, as I said to you before we started taping, that Josh Downs is banged up. I doubt he plays in this game. There's really been – I'm searching every corner of the internet for a damn Josh Downs injury update. Okay. Like, I mean, come on. Well, give me something. How many games is this guy going to miss? Josh Downs has been one of the best separators in the NFL. Full stop. Not like best rookie separators. Best, like one of the best separators in the NFL right now to start his rookie season. So he's a big loss, but I do think this, like Michael Pittman, I used him as our conviction pick to start for this week. I think he's a top 10 receiver on the week for me. The Patriots play a ton of single high. We typically see like that lead to targets to the top receiver. That is definitely Michael Pittman. Anyways, it'll be Michael Pittman even more with Josh Downs out of the mix. Maybe you could get frisky with like a deep shot to Alec Pierce. I tend to think that's not going to happen with old Gardner Minshew back there. So Michael Pittman, Jonathan Taylor's reemergence, that as the clear cut RB1, that makes the Colts interesting, but that's about all I got in terms of interesting in this game.
Yeah. Cosign Pittman, they passed the baton to JT last week. The workload finally went heavy on his side. And Sam Moss is clearly the backup contingency player and not somebody. I thought our colleague Kate Majuk made a case of maybe playing Moss last week. I thought it made sense because the matchup was so good. And it was hard to know that the Colts were going to decide, okay, now we're going to steer into the guy we paid. But they did. That's what they did. So we have to follow that. You have to play Demario Douglas. You have my permission. Otherwise, if you want to skip this game, again, it's the Germany game. It's the early game. I know for some of the West Coasters, it may be hard to get up on time. I don't think you're missing much if you don't watch this game.
Yeah. Don't drop Zach Moss, because if anything ever happened to Jonathan Taylor, you want him. Like I got, because he's on one of my teams, like, you know, you get those notifications at the top of your teams. Like this player has been dropped in all these Yahoo leagues or whatever. And look, I got that for Zach Moss. I'm like, yo, don't be dropping Zach Moss. Hang on to him. You definitely want him, but you probably can't really play him anymore confidently. The good news is that the Colts run so many plays that there will be weeks, if you desperation have to play him, that like he could find his way into the end zone. He could find his way into a couple big plays because they just run a ton of plays and they play very fast. But I think the days of him as like a running back too, even with Jonathan Taylor in the mix, are probably over.
I co-sign with everything you said. They also have a run-heavy touchdown profile, and we know Minshew isn't much of a scrambler, so when they do score, probably Taylor, but it could be Moss too. Moss, not counting guys who are like in nebulous committees like the Miami guys, Moss is probably the most valuable running back who isn't a starter right now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Next game up here, Atlanta Falcons, 1.5-point favorites going to Arizona to take on the Kyler Murray led Cardinals. Over under is 43.5. Scott is shaking his head. So let's table the Falcons for a second and let's talk about the Cardinals. I'm excited about seeing Kyler Murray with this team. And I think they're excited too. I think they are very open to, you know what? Kyler Murray is just going to be our quarterback. I think they're open to, like, right now, if the draft happened today, according to Tankathon, the Cardinals would be the number one overall pick. I think they are very comfortable, Scott, this team, if they, and you know, our colleague Charles Robinson kind of alluded to this on Inside Coverage in their podcast episode, that like if the Cardinals end up picking sixth or seventh in the draft because Kyler Murray gave him a couple of good moments to end the season, they'd be very happy with that. I think Kyler Murray returning makes Marquise Brown an every week fantasy starter. You heat check me on these. I think he makes Marquise Brown an every week fantasy starter. I think he makes Trey McBride a top 12 tight end potentially. When James Conner's back, he's a workhorse. And even like rookie Michael Wilson, I want to stash him because I think he's played well. He's a little banged up right now, but I think Murray would make him very interesting. A yes or no to any of this?
I'm halfway there. I like the talents you're mentioning, and I like the narrowness of the usage. But I need to see a good game from Kyler Murray. And I've just been spooked by some quarterbacks who have come back off long layoffs and looked like they've never played football before. Doesn't mean Kyler Murray can't be good right away, but I need to see it. So I will happy to roster McBride, but probably wouldn't play him proactively. Brown is somebody you probably have to start based on the composition of your roster. I get it. Even Connor off a long layoff. As soon as he comes back, I feel like he's going to have 20 touches. So maybe that just makes him playable because volume is the story of running backs. But before I tell myself a happy story about the Cardinals, I need to see that Kyler Murray is some version of Kyler Murray that we saw before. Maybe I'm just letting the Watson stuff spook me, but there's been other quarterbacks who've had. It's just a hard position to play. And I know the whole Dobbs thing doesn't make sense. And part of what he does is just because he's running around and it's schoolyard. That's not, you shouldn't look at that and think, oh, somebody was saying somewhere in a podcast, is quarterback even that important? Of course it is. That's just a fluke. It's why it's so much fun. Yeah. Because it's so wacky and so not to be expected that you can enjoy it for that reason. But I need a prove it game from Kyler Murray.
And just, sorry, on that Josh Dobbs stuff too, I know like it gets like kind of to be a joke, but the guy is literally a rocket scientist. Like they're probably 99% of NFL quarterbacks couldn't process all that information in real time. Cause they're just like not smart enough. They're not as smart as Josh Dobbs. And I'm not saying those guys are stupid. There's a lot of really smart quarterbacks in the NFL, but from just a pure intelligence perspective, that's why it's so cool. Not because like any old goofball could have done that. It's that Josh Dobbs did that. Cause like, he can literally process the information that Kevin O'Connell is giving him in real time. Like, okay, here's the play call. Read out the play call. And like, now let me explain to you what you just told those guys to do and do all that in real time while the bullets are flying. That's just a credit to Josh Dobbs. I mean, yeah, give me a break. Come on.
Counterpoint, wasn't Matt Patricia a rocket scientist?
Well, I don't know. That's a good counterpoint.
I'm all for Josh Dobbs. I wrote in the tweet for the sleeper piece, and it's kind of sheepish to put him in sleepers because he's almost at 50% rostered. But if loving Josh Dobbs is wrong, I don't want to be right. Let's go to Arthur Smith. Let's give Arthur Smith credit for one thing, begrudgingly, because you know when we start airing our grievances, Arthur Smith's gonna be at the top of the list when we get to that point. Talk about your fake holidays, right? December 23rd, Festivus. He's getting production out of Jonnu Smith, right? He's the secondary guys in Atlanta haven't been bad. The problem is you spent all this friggin' draft capital on guys you have no idea how to use. And when people ask you, why aren't you using them? Arthur Smith doubles down and digs in deeper and says, well, you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm Arthur Smith. He's almost trying to spite everybody. Like, I'll show everybody how smart I am by not utilizing guys. His best obvious easy buttons. And it's going to be – I feel so lucky that I don't have Bijan Robinson shares. It's just the way drafts fell. I think I liked him probably about industry average. Yeah. I would have been fine having a bunch of Robinson. I don't, and that was more just the luck of the draw than anything else. This would be forcing me to pull my hair out because there's no reason why they get close to the goal line. They don't want Robinson on the field. They don't want Robinson handling the ball. You drafted him where you drafted him, and everybody thought he was a running back who comes around every 5 or 10 years. And then you use him like he's part of a committee or even a secondary back. It just doesn't make it. I have no fresh take on this. Are we at a point we have to rank Jonnu Smith higher than Kyle Pitts?
Yeah, probably. I think so. I don't ever like being negative on the show, and it's why I hated doing this segment. But I did list Bijan Robinson as my least favorite first round pick this year. People hated that take. At the time, and the only reason I did it wasn't because of all this Arthur Smith weirdness. It was that I thought that Tyler Allgeier was going to be a big factor, and it doesn't matter. This is the thing. It does not matter what you think about Bijan Robinson. It matters what Arthur Smith thinks, and he happens to think a little bit different than everybody else. And he clearly loves this guy, Tyler Allgeier. Like he don't put the success rate metrics in front of his face. He thinks he's one of the best goal line backs in the NFL. He's going to continue to get goal line looks, period.
What's that phrase that when people show you who they are, believe them? Well, yeah, Arthur Smith has screamed out all year who he is. And look, I get it. If out of nowhere, Robinson has a blow up game. There's going to be this Twitter victory. See, that's why you stick with talent and you bet on talent and everything.
Totally,
I've given up waiting for that. And the great news, Matt, is now we can pivot to another first round running back who's driving everybody crazy in the next game.
By the way, that was in that same podcast. Dan Titus said his least favorite first round pick was Saquon Barkley. And again, people were very, very mean to us about that, which is why it sucks. I hate doing this stuff. It's not fun to talk negative about players, but sometimes.
And that's not even who I'm teeing up here. But yes, the Giants and Cowboys, minus 17 and a half for the Cowboys. What a huge line. 39 and a half total. Last week, Matt, I was getting Tony Pollard start sit questions. And you know what's funny? I kept hitting start, start, start. It probably was wrong in every instance. The other guy was probably the right answer.
By the way, Scott, Tony Pollard wasn't even a first round pick.
Okay.
He was like a second round pick, but almost every fantasy analyst was like, why is Tony Pollard not a first round pick? Like, he should be a first round pick. He should be a first round pick. Easy click in the first round, easy click in the early second round.
Yeah.
Disaster pick if you took him in the second round so far. And I mean, I just said he's like an is what it is territory. Like, this is probably what it's going to, he can easily have a blow up game. Shoot, Tony Pollard could blow up in this game. Cowboys are 17 and a half point favorites. The Giants aren't very good. Last time he scored a touchdown was against these damn New York Giants. But I don't want you to get fooled that, like, if Tony Pollard does big in this game, he's going to have big games. There's no question he's going to have at least one or two more big games to end the season. It could be this one. I just don't think that's going to happen on a weekly basis.
A couple of problems here. One, his efficiency is way down from this year. I'm not saying Rico Dowdle's better than Tony Pollard, but I think it's very interesting that Dowdle, in a limited role, has a higher success rate. And actually, if you need to, running back
sounds
is ugly.
Like Tony Pollard.
Right, for sure. You know, it's not to the level of Tony Pollard. Pollard's early seasons were so much fun, where Zeke was starting to hit that second phase of his career, and it felt like every time Pollard touched it, he was ripping off splash plays. Dowdle is not anywhere near that level, and I'm not trying to suggest it. But running back is gross on the waiver wire, and I know these darts miss the board a lot, but, you know, big spread, garbage time's possible. You can squint and see, oh, maybe Dowdle cleans up and gets 7 to 10 touches and maybe a little bit of goal line equity. Garbage time hero, totally in play. What's hurting Pollard going forward, not just in this game necessarily, because, again, the Giants, they're not even a football team at this point, and they've been really unlucky with injuries, third string quarterback. But the Cowboys have figured something out with their passing game. Lamb has been unstoppable in the slot. And Jake Ferguson was one of those, all the indicators are good, trust it, trust it, trust it. And I realize it probably took a little bit too long for some of the Ferguson people. They may have cut him or may have not played him in the right weeks, but he's their second guy now. It's not the other these secondary receivers have been disappointments, and they've actually started to use Tolbert a little bit more last week, maybe to their detriment at times, because I don't know why they threw the last pass to Tolbert, but
signed Martavis Bryant.
the best thing in Dallas right now is Prescott to Lamb. And the second best thing in Dallas right now is Prescott to Jake Ferguson.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's a clear cut, like, tight end one. Not even like a he'll be in the back half. No, like, he's a guy I
want to start. No qualifier needed.
Yeah.
You got him, you're starting him, man.
Yeah, he's a guy I want to start. Shoot, I have one team where I have Travis Kelce, and, like, I'm starting Jake Ferguson in my flex. Because, I mean, the rest of my players are a disaster, but
tight ends rallied nicely, man. It's you know, Schultz has been good lately, Ferguson's been good lately. Musgrave, if you needed to dig deep last week. Otten had a couple of touchdowns. He was on the sleeper list. It's Kincaid came around at the right time. It's been a nice rally. The Falcons are supporting two fantasy. No, I can't say that with conviction, but anyway.
Well, they're supporting one, just not the one you want.
Yeah, Trey McBride's been good. You know, been pretty good.
I want to see more of Rico Dowdle.
And Joku hasn't been bad lately.
Yeah. No, yeah, he's got some interesting usage, but he's been involved. I would like to see more of Rico Dowdle for the Cowboys offense. Just get some grinder carries. I think he's a guy, once you get past your bye
week, stash him right now.
Yeah, just in case, like, anything happens to Tony Pollard, and in case they start giving him a little more burn, he becomes weekly standalone value. Before we move on from this game, Scott, say one sentence about the Giants.
Barkley will get 23 touches in this game.
Poor bastard, honestly. I mean, he's going to just get 20, 30 touches every single week for this team that's going absolutely nowhere. And then they're just going to probably cast him aside at the end of the year, and he'll have been run into the ground. I mean, that's awful.
It's a cruel reality of the NFL. But a lot of times when we recommend pickups, it's like, oh, he's gone in my league. He's gone in my league. Dowdle is available in 97% of Yahoo right now. So some of you, he may not be available.
The 3%ers are throwing both middle fingers up at the
right.
At the
yeah, maybe right in the Eckler league, he's rostered, probably on Eckler's team, but or maybe he's playing quarterback for Matt Harmon's team. But no, he's available. God, he's available in most leagues. I also want to point out, if you're not watching on YouTube, that Matt's wearing a very sharp East Coast hat today. Quality lid, Matt. I want to say props for that hat before. I guess we're going to have to talk about the Raiders and Jets, but I wanted to mention the hat first. Felt more important.
Thank you. It is more important. Love a good just random hat. By the way, Rico Dowdle is rostered in the Eckler League. He's on Adam Rank's bench.
The great Adam Rank. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I hope Adam Rank doesn't realize who his starting quarterback is and it gives me a free win this week. So
was Rank at your wedding? Was he part of the
he was
the NFL
dude,
Mafia?
He was.
Yeah.
This is just here's how much we really don't want to talk about the Jets and Raiders. Great story about Adam Rank, who was at my wedding. Made a big scene about how he allegedly was the last person invited. Nonsense. Rank is nonsense. My wife's cousin, who would love that I'm telling this story. My wife's cousin is a guy who he likes to enjoy himself. Let's put it that way. He comes, okay. He comes up to me the day after our wedding and says, "Yo, Matt, like, I want you to give me props. Like, I really wanted to go up to Adam Rank here throughout the whole time of your wedding and tell him that that MF-er owes me $200 for some bad fantasy call." And I'm like, "Zach, you did do that. Cause Adam Rank told me last night that he said, 'Hey, your Bree's cousin came up to me and said, I owe him $200.
That's so awesome.
It's like, "No, Zach, I hate to tell you, I'm not giving you any props because you did do that. That is a thing that happened." So yeah, that's my Adam Rank story.
That's what weddings are for, right? Is just to find people who have cost you money or given you bad fantasy advice. Thankfully, the last time I went to a wedding, my good friend Rod McNeil got married, I guess a year and a half ago. I was actually the best man, which poor judgment on Rod's part. But otherwise, it was an awesome wedding. But fortunately, I was not fantasy trolled by anybody in attendance.
I was probably fantasy trolled by somebody at my own wedding. So there was that. But all right, enough of that. Let's waste no more time. Let's finish this. Let's land this plane, Scott. Ugh. New York Jets -1 going to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders. I mean, give me the Raiders +1. Am I serious? Raiders 36.5-point over under here. I actually kind of feel bad having the Raiders in the skip category and all the way down here, because I'm at least interested to see this Antonio Pierce vibe.
Me too.
If this can continue. I mean, they've literally talked about, like, Antonio Pierce has said, "We want to get Josh Jacobs over the century mark. We want to get him. He's the heartbeat of the team," all that stuff. I kind of believe Antonio Pierce when he says that. I'm also curious to see if Davante Adams, his slow streak can come to an end. It's the worst possible matchup for Davante Adams to get right here. But, I mean, he's too good to be down forever. So put the Jets aside for a second. I feel bad for having the Raiders in the skip category and saving them over an hour talking about my wife's cousin before I talk about the Raiders on this podcast, because I do find them intriguing.
It may not happen this week, but there are better times ahead for both of these teams, because they're both going to steer. Pierce came along at the right time. Everybody had quit on McDaniels. Garoppolo needed to be benched. Not that O'Connell is necessarily anything great, but they needed to do something different. They needed a new vibe, a new ethos. They have it. Straight out of Compton. I love everything Pierce is saying. And the Raiders, we've seen it before, right? Remember with pit boss Rich Bisaccia? He had that nice run.
Yeah.
I remember asking a Raider fan, "You know, who's even the last coach you liked?" He's like, "Bisaccia."
You know, yeah. Saying? Yeah.
That's how down bad it's been for Raider coaches. But at least they have some hope now. They're coming off a win. Oh, whatever. You dominated the Giants. Here's a parade for you. But did you see in that game? I know Adams had a quiet game, still had the big route share, target share, all that stuff. Adams looked happy. Adams looked engaged.
Yes.
And it may not happen this week, because the Jets, obviously, they have such great talent to match up with Adams. It'll be fun to watch it. But it's going to happen for Davante Adams. I would not trade deadlines up. A lot of people might be like, "I got to get out of this." If you can get through this week, if this week is not critical to you, you play Adams, you take what you get, I think he's going to be fine. I think he proved in that Lions game, he still got open. Just needs somebody to throw the ball somewhere in his area code. And at least the Jets, I know that Monday game was awful. Zach Wilson's not good. But at least the Jets have identified, we have two special talents at offense. Everybody knows who they are. Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson. Let's prioritize those guys. So that's the bottom line. This game has like 17-13 or 16-13 written all over it. I get it. But at the end of the year, I think you're going to be like, "Yeah, you know, I'm glad I rostered the two key Jets, and I'm glad I rostered Jacobs and Adams. At least they came around in the second half of the season. Maybe they're not going to win your league for you. Maybe they're going to go down as net losses because Aaron Rodgers got hurt and because the Raiders season fell apart. But I still think the arrow for both of these offenses is kind of pointing up. It just may not be this week.
Yeah, that is so perfectly said. If Adams doesn't go off in this game, I would try to trade for him before the trade deadline.
For sure.
I like that a lot. I think you're right. Those guys will all be net losses because of where they went and the journey thus far. And especially for the Jets guys, like, it just is what it is. I mean, Breece Hall might not go down as a net loss because he went with an injury discount, a Dalvin Cook discount. And so, but yeah, overall, they won't reach the, especially with Adams, is not going to reach the heights of where he was drafted. But I still think there are good days to come for.
I'm at the point now with Dalvin Cook, by the way, that when I was perusing free agents for stash value, I don't even want Cook. I hate to say it. I just don't think there's anything left with that guy.
No, yeah. I mean, they play like Michael Carter in the 2-minute drill over Breece Hall, which is frustrating, but it's like an indication of where they're at with Dalvin Cook. Real quick, before we end the podcast, just because you said the thing about the Raiders head coaches, it is a bleak recent history of Raiders head coaches. Josh McDaniels, John Gruden, Jack Del Rio, Dennis Allen, Hugh Jackson, Tom Cable, Lane Kiffin. That is a very, like, extremely unlike that is not a I want to get a beer with group of dudes right there. I mean, maybe it's not a good I think in his heart of hearts, like, I wonder how long did Mark Davis take to regret not just giving Rich Bisaccia the head coaching gig, and that is why I think if Antonio Pierce even just has good vibes rest of the way, he's gonna end up being the Raiders head coach.
Well, so much
From a financial perspective too. Shoot, I mean, they're still paying Gruden. I think they're still paying. They're definitely gonna be paying Josh McDaniels for a long time. It's a 6-year contract. They might only be able to afford Antonio Pierce.
Right. I mean, no matter how rich you are, you run out of money at some point. And you can be a head coach. Doesn't always have to be your X's and O's guys. The assistants can do the coaching, and the head coach can be tone, can be face of the franchise. You think of the way Dan Campbell coaches, right? I mean, not that he doesn't have input, obviously, in what they do, but he's got a wizard running his offense, you know? And I forget off the top of my head who their defensive coordinator is, but he's doing a great job too. I really like these strides they've made on defense. The head coach, the CEO head coaching model, I think makes more sense than the X's and O's coaching model. And granted, I keep giving Ben Johnson a job and everything, and there's certainly X's and O's head coaches who have worked. Andy Reid is a great example of one, but I prefer the CEO model, and maybe Pierce can be one of those guys.
Yeah. Some guys are talented to do both, but it's really hard to find. That's like a unicorn guy that you can be the CEO and be the X's and O's guys. I think Sean McVay has been that, but he's been a guy that's been burnt out by doing that. So there's a lot that goes into it, but all right, Scott, that was great. Love that. Love that ending there, and hell of an episode, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Great. We get to talk about Rich Bisaccia and your hat, you know, and your wedding and Adam Rank. Also, so much fantasy hockey. We got some great sidebars in this episode. Oh, and, you know, because look, I even got to talk a little bit about Tyreek Hill and AJ Brown, who aren't playing, man, because I'm going to miss those guys. You're the reception perception guy. I mean, can you believe AJ Brown's 6'1", by the way? Every time I watch him play, I'm like, he's 6'3", 6'4", right? Look at him high point the ball. He's 6'1". That can't be right.
The Juju Smith-Schuster comparisons from his draft profile, that was a fun time.
Right. He didn't show swagger against Alabama. It's impossible to do this stuff. Even the smartest people in the room, as much as I bash teams for getting picks wrong, it's such a hard job to do it. Even the smartest people are going to make colossal mistakes. But I was looking up some of the Sam Laporta pre-draft stuff, and he was compared to Lance Kendricks. My verdict is in. Sam Laporta is going to have a better career than Lance Kendricks. Easy for me to say 2 months into the season. It's not like I was drafted Laporta left and right before the year, but it's hard, man. It's hard out there.
It is hard. Hey, well, that's why you come to Scott Pienowski for the sizzling hot takes. Like, Sam Laporta is going to be better than Lance Kendricks here on early November. All right. On that note, that is going to do it today, folks. Shout out to Scott. Hell of an episode. Be sure to tune in first thing Monday morning to hear that great man, Scott Pienowski, break down all the action from week 10 with me. Until then, we're out.